Good morning, everybody. The Bible says it's good for the brethren and sistren to gather together, to be able to be here this celebration of 30 years. Let me go by as a blink. So many things, changes, good and bad. And it's steady, like a ship sailing on the sea. And Lord, I just ask that this time would be edifying to your people, glorifying to you, and Father, that your work would continue to grow here. Well, Paula and I came to this church kind of cautiously. We've been in several churches that had had different things come up from time to time. And the last one, we had liquidated our assets and we're going to go out on a mission. And that went sour. So we were kind of hiding out for a while. Actually, quite a while. And Greg and Linda came to our door. And they had some information on this church that was meeting in the basement of the Holiday Inn in Glen Ellen. And we took that information and we looked at it very carefully. And about 6 weeks later, we attended a service. And you could feel the unity. You could feel the love. The word was preached clearly, and those in attendance were receiving that word, and we decided that we'd found a home. I have a quote here from John Calvin. He said, "The face of the church comes forth and becomes visible in our eyes wherever we see the word of God purely preached and heard, and the sacraments administered according to Christ's institution. There, it is not to be doubted, a church of God exists." You've got one here. Now we're going to have some folks come on up and share their experiences with the church since they've been here. And it's more or less chronological. So with that, I'm going to have Mike come on up. And if you would, to save time, because we've got quite a few folks, as each one finishes, the next one in order, just come on up here and continue. Kido.
My daughter said, "Wow, Mike, we can call you the oldest member of Glen Arbor." Yeah, I didn't like that title. Got different connotations. So, whoops. I'm just going to try to use the stands. So I'm going to tell you guys just a little bit about the very beginnings, the first few days, few months of Glen Arbor, before we even had a public service. And this was back in May of 1987. I had moved from graduate college, moved here, back here from college, and I heard that there was two pastors that were going to move here and plant the church that were associated. Chris Biang from East Lansing, Michigan. I knew I'd get that. And Daniel Gehring from Champaign-Urbana. Okay. Not too many Illini. But in the meantime, so I knew that they were coming in town. I was like, wow, I want to be a part of that church plan. It's going to be great. And I was given this list of some folks that were associated with our association that were already here in Chicago that might be interested, and said, you know, go for it, start meeting, you know, form a little beachhead before the pastors move to town. And so I called them all, and there was a few that were interested. One, I remember Father Michael Malley, and I'm going to throw out a few names, some of you guys remember him, some of you don't. And Michael Malley said, "We're in." And so we decided to meet at his house that Wednesday, meet each other, the people that were interested. And Michael Malley later told me that his wife was on the porch, and he did a little dance. Like,
church.
And she's like, what are you talking about? And he explained the whole thing. So we started meeting with Michael Malley. Others joined in. Bob Telcott moved to town from Champaign that summer. And the typical Sunday morning of those first few months were, I got up early and went to Austin neighborhood of Chicago and picked up this brother, Dindo Basilko, and because he didn't have a car. And then we drove down to the O'Malley house, which was in southwest Chicago. We were all over the place. Other people drove in from northwest suburbs, all over the place in Chicago. And we all convened at the O'Malley house, and we helped them clean up and set up a little bit. Then people came in and had coffee and donuts. Then we would sing and pray together, and then we would watch a sermon. We didn't have any pastors in town. So we would watch a sermon on this technology called VHS. So I don't know if you remember that. Yeah, I know. This is going way back, folks. So we'd watch a sermon on VHS tape. They'd send us different videos. And then we would stop and we'd break bread together. And then we would stop after that and we would fellowship and have lunch together. And then we would go out to a park and share the gospel for a couple hours. That was every Sunday. So we got home about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the key point there is that sharing the gospel was a key part of our church from day one. Every time we got together, it was part of what we did was break bread, pray, fellowship, listen to teaching, and share the gospel. That was what we did as a church. That was our early months. Within a few months, others started moving that fall. Some people started moving back into town like Scott and Luann Boehringer. And I remember at the time, what stood out to me as I reflected on it was that everyone was reaching out to people with the gospel within their relational circles. Scott was sharing the gospel with a guy that he worked with in his new job, and that guy came to faith, and he was following him up. Margie Boghossian, if you remember, introduced us to this guy, David Wolford, and he started coming around, we shared the gospel. He came to Christ and joined in our church. In our young church, I remember one night we had this midweek gathering at Scott and Luann's home, which was in the southwest suburbs. So we, like I said, everyone was all over the place. We hadn't decided where we were going to plant the church yet. And I remember Kim Smith was in town. That was Bob Telcott's new fiance. And she was in town for the gathering first time. I think I had met her, but it was the first time she had kind of come to a fellowship meeting. And Dindo brought this girl, Maria, that he was reaching out to. And it was only the second time we had ever met Maria. Here she is in this new church plant fellowship at Scott Luann's. And I distinctly remember all of us standing around talking, and Kim and Maria are talking in the kitchen. You know how Kim gets the loud voice every once in a while? The Kim loud voice? All right. So Kim was like really loud, said, "You mean no one shared the gospel with you yet?" And everyone stopped talking and looked. And then went on to our conversations. And then Kim shared the gospel with her. And I don't remember if she came to Christ that night, but shortly thereafter. And the key point there is that sharing the gospel in relationships was prolific in our church. We didn't really even need a building or a place that we met because everyone was just sharing the gospel with people in their relation and naturally introducing those relationships to our body because we were all a bunch of young singles. And so we were together all the time. And so people, I mean, we met at work and here and there, we brought them in, and we all fellowshipped, and it was all around Christ and the gospel. And people were coming to faith and joining in. Then the pastors rolled into town, first Daniel Gary and then Crispy Yang, and we started planning a more public launch, and they did research and decided it was going to be here in the far west suburbs where we planned the church. And so we picked a location that we would launch the official public service. Daniel Gary had heard of this system called Phones for You back in that day. It was very popular. So we decided to embark on that initiative. And so we picked a grand opening, like a kickoff date for our church. And then a couple months beforehand, a Christian business offered us their phone bank to use every evening. And so for weeks, we just called through the phone book. Phone number after phone number. I think we called 15,000 phones over a course of many weeks on this phone bank every night. And we told them what we were doing, planting a church, see if they were interested. If they were interested in our mailing list, we put them on our mailing list. I don't know how many we had on the mailing list, maybe 1,000 out of those 50,000 calls or something like that. And then as the date approached, we mailed them every week, and then we called them a week beforehand to remind them, hey, remember, our kickoff's this Sunday. Are you still interested? Are you thinking about coming? And some people said yes. And I think about 75 first-time visitors at least showed up that first Sunday, including the Fulmers right there. So they were on that list. And I remember that first year, just in summary, as we were starting the fellowship, reaching for Christ, and running all over the place fellowship until we kind of got settled. I remember driving home from some event on 294 and seeing just the row after row of light and realizing there's so many people in this greater Chicago metro area that need the Lord. And that I think a conviction cemented in my heart that I was going to give my life to this. And that's what we've done over the last 30 years. This church was founded on the mission of spreading the gospel in Chicagoland area. In 30 years, the same church has the same mission, the same Lord. So the Lord's been gracious and hopefully glorified as we have served him for 30 years. And now John was one of the next people to move into town, and so he's going to share a couple things.
I'll be brief. Couple things. Part of the reason I'd be brief, otherwise I'd be here for an hour because there's a lot to share. I actually first came up here in March of for a job interview, and at that time the church was meeting at the Holiday Inn in Elmhurst. And I came for the weekend instead of the morning. And moved here then in June. Summer, and we had to kick off. I'm going to share a verse from Isaiah 6:8. A lot of you know this verse. And I've heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send? Whom will go for us?" And then I said, "Here I am." When I moved, there wasn't a question. I followed.
Well, knowing John so well, when he said he was going to be brief, I said, "No way, John's never brief." But you proved me wrong, John. So here I am. They asked me to share today, and I don't know, I guess being an engineer, I just had 3 points, I guess. So my first point was that as a church and as a movement of churches, you know, we just have a big emphasis on doing God's work, of spreading his kingdom, of spreading the gospel to the world. And so my first point was that in my own life, I had three of my best friends, which was Kevin Stone, Lee Warner, and now Amy Muehlhausen, all either came to Christ or got out of a cult through this church. And two out of the three actually met their wife here. And so, you know, that obviously is a big change in their course of their life. And I actually met my wife here, too, I think more later. So just, you know, by being a part of this church, I was part of, and we all together reached people that changed them for eternity. And these are just my closest people, but I think we've all had influence on changing so many people's lives. The next thing I was going to share is, you know, the first thought I had is, you know, a lot of times I'll hear people say, "Well, you know, I went to the service, but I've heard that before." You know what? I'm like in the 99 percentile on the ACT or, you know, something. I'm a pretty smart guy. And I come to church, and I hear the message, and I'm like, man, I guess I knew that. But, boy, I needed to be reminded of that. I have totally forgotten about it. So through the years, I've come to this church, and I've heard messages, and I've just been around people and seen examples that have changed my life and helped me to keep walking in Christ. So that was the second point, just that this church has taught the truth, and it influences me. And even if you've heard it before, I know I need to hear it again. Anyway. And my last point was, is I think in my time here in the last 30 years, it has really helped crystallize in my own heart what I felt was the key thing about what the church is. And I've probably talked about this before and sometimes when I've come up here and spoken up front, but still, since this is probably one of the biggest things, influences in my life, I felt I had to say it again, which is that, and this is a Great Commission concept, and I think when I heard this the first time when I was young, I was just like, wow, that's cool. That's really, but anyway, the church, you know, it's a family, it's an army, you know, it's out there fighting for the kingdom, and it's a body. We're all related and interconnected together. And I think most of all, the church is a place where Christ's love should be at. Now, we're all a bunch of imperfect sinners, so we fail often. But that's the goal, you know, that Christ's love is here. That if you want true and perfect love, this is a good place to start. So for myself, I'm the kind of guy that, I don't know, I kind of see what's popular, or I see popular people, or I look up to people sometimes. And I think that's not really, I think, on God's agenda. That's not God's plan, I think. You know, God's not really interested in who's popular or who looks cool. God's interested in everybody. You know, the littlest, you know, the littlest, the most seemingly insignificant one. You know, when it talks in Corinthians about, you know, like when it compares us to a body, and I don't even remember what part it was, but like the toe. Like, oh, that toe, he's not important. Well, in God's thinking, the toe is very important. And so I think through the years, there's, you know, we've gone through some trials as a church, and people that I really looked up to have, you know, moved on to other places, you know, for a variety of reasons. And that's not to say that they weren't doing it for the best possible reasons. But for myself, it was a time where I was forced to come to, okay, well, what does God think's important? Does God want you to just follow people wherever they go, you know, or does God want you to stick to these principles? You know, the church is a body. You know, it's an army. It's a family. Am I calling you, Jim, to go someplace else? No, just because I'm calling other people to go somewhere does not mean I'm calling you to go somewhere. And so for me, as a character area, it's been great, you know, because I've had to stand for what I really believe in, which is that we are, you know, God's word is being preached here. We're an army. We're a body, a family. We're not perfect. We fail in many, many different ways, I'm sure. But we're, this is a place where Christ's love can be found. And so for me, that's been a big thing in my life, is learning to stand up for that and for what the church really is.
Thanks, Jim. All right. Of the thousands of stories I could have thought of, I've still been thinking about what stories do I tell. And I was thinking about, I also had 3 points being an engineer. That's what I was, it's safe. It's safe. You have 3 points, 3 things, just say 3 things. And so I remember, just going back before we started in Michigan State University, that's where they give out bachelor's degrees and master's degrees, right, Barbara? Whether they're real or not. You know, that's an inside joke, so we'll talk about that later. So I remember specifically this whole idea of, well, hey, we're going to send some teams to Chicago, you know, to start a church there. And I thought about it. It's like, wow, I wonder if I should go. And they were talking it up. And remember that we're all college, we're, you know, right out of college. So had my job for like a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and just starting to get my career going. And but I was very involved in the MSU Bible study there. And so I was deciding whether to go. And I said, Lord, if someone asks me, I'll go. If someone asks me to go. And so then what happened was, right after that, people asked me to go at different occasions. So one was Chris, another was Steve Russell, and one was Aaron Vigil. And then they got mad at each other because each of them asked me separately, which was kind of funny. No, I was supposed to ask. Oh, you were supposed to ask. Right, Lord, you really want me to go? Because 3 people asked me. But what was so that was kind of a funny story. And I remember getting in, thinking, all right, I got to get a job out here. Well, the jobs market for electronics engineer, which was really what I was terrible. And it had just fallen out. Silicon Valley had just taken a big dump, if you guys remember, in the mid-'80s, late-'80s. And so there really weren't very many jobs. And so I decided to come out anyway. And I remember I was still kind of interviewing. And so one of the I drove out here, and I just picked a hotel to stay in. And at this one job interview, well, it happened to be the Holiday Inn that we met at for a while, which is the same. It happened to be, and I mean random. I just drove somewhere. I had never been to Chicago before. But it's interesting that I stopped there. Another story was that I got here, and one of the first people I met was Mike Eichen, and he's sitting there playing his guitar, and we haven't really started services yet, and things haven't gotten going. I remember the first thing that's about is that, you know, hey, you're an engineer? I'm an engineer, too. We're probably living together. Did you not say that? Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't remember. There are many things Mike forgets that he says, but that was definitely one of them. And we did end up rooming together for quite a while, so that was great. One of the things, I guess those are the three things that I remember, and there are many other stories, but one of the things that impressed me recently was we were kind of talking about how many, you know, what has this church done? Where are we at? And we're still here, and how many people have been affected? I was going through some photos, which I put up on the television, and some of them I couldn't show you because they're not in the right format for that. But there are thousands of people that I was kind of looking at photos and photos and photos, and I was like, oh, yeah, this guy, this person, this gal. And it was just kind of heart-wrenching. But as far as where they're at now, but we have affected well over 1,000, maybe 2,000 people with the gospel easily, and probably more. And one of the things that I've had offers to maybe go somewhere else or do something else, both in ministry and in work, and I always thought, I haven't finished here. We're not done. You three guys asked me to come out here to reach Chicagoland. Well, we're not done. And that's what has kept me here, and that's why I've stayed with it. And what I've been really impressed with is you guys and others who have a run with us. And I was thinking of this verse, Jeremiah 12:5, and I really love it. It says, if you have run with footmen, and they have tired you out, then how can you compete with horses? And you guys are horses. You've run the race. The race is still going, but you're not quitting. And that's what I really appreciate about you guys and being with you guys. That's it. Thank you.
I was wondering who is next. It's me. So I was at Purdue University with Mike. He graduated a little before me because he's smarter. Just kidding. I decided I liked school so much that I got another degree and got a master's degree. And after a while, as you move up in degrees, that work becomes harder and harder. I go, wow, this is really hard being in college. All the work, especially at least get paid if I can do this. So I started, my parents, my family, we were kind of nominally religious. We went to church parts of the year, a lot of times in the winter. Summer, we went to the beach a lot. Pretty active. And so I said, well, I don't know if I believe any of this. I know the stories. And God used that process to wonder, is this true or not? Is this real or not? And I started reading the Bible on my own. Went to a Billy Graham crusade. A friend took me to a Billy Graham crusade in the Hartford Civic Center. And I remember listening to him, and I still, you know, because Billy Graham just wasn't a good communicator. I didn't get it. I went down on the floor. I go, what am I supposed to do? I don't understand. I wasn't ready. I didn't understand, and I needed to see the gospel working. And somehow, for me, in my own limitations. I needed to see it. And God brought me out to Purdue University. I thought it was my idea, but I believe that God brought me there so I could meet people and see if the gospel changed people's lives. And I saw that, and I go, I don't know if these people can, but it's attractive, and I want whatever that is. And I hung out with them, and I was in Bible studies, and I finally became a Christian at Purdue University. And I says, wow, I'm learning a lot about my faith, and I realized I wasn't a Christian, and I want to stay with this movement because I'm learning a lot here. And I met with, that's important. It's important to me not to just, and I think this kind of comes from my father a lot. You know, my father is one of those guys, you meet some of these guys, you don't quit. What I learned from my father, you don't quit. You don't give up. When it's hard, what do? You don't give up. I learned some of those things. But I wanted to stay. I go, where are you guys going? And so got my degree, and I'm calling and job interviewing, and I thought, well, I know we have churches around. Our college churches were still connected with our movement ended up being four different church movements, but at the time we were all still connected. And I said, hey, the guy says, hey, where do you want to go? I says, well, we've got an office in Indianapolis and East Lansing. Church in East Lansing or Lansing, and I said, okay, I'll go to Lansing. That sounds good. Well, I didn't know there was a Lansing, Illinois. I thought I was going to East Lansing, Michigan, because we had a church there. It had to be for deep research. Had to be at Lansing and East Lansing. So I accepted the job offer, and I said, well, how far is that from here? He said, about an hour and a half. Farther away. And it turns out I was working in Lansing, Illinois. That's where the company office was. God used even, God does that, he uses our mistakes in our lives for good. And now I'm here working with you all in ministry as we lead out in faith. And back then, we didn't have a meeting location. We tried different places and going all over. And I can pick out different things. One of the things that people could have said was a failure from a numbers point of view is one of our, you know, we were younger, so we just, hey, let's try this, let's try that. And one of our goals was to knock on every door in the town of Bamba, meet the people, share the gospel. And we did, and by the end, I don't know what happens with everybody, but when we said we're going to do this, I go, we're going to do this, and we had a lot left to do. And I remember Greg and I would go out. Everyone else gave up or whatever they were done. But we weren't done yet, so Greg and I were going out three or four nights a week to finish. I don't know what happened. I don't think a lot of people came to church, but from that, somehow, I was pretty shy before that process, but somehow I became more comfortable talking. Hey, God did that. Before that, it scared me to death, but I had to do it, and now I do it quite a bit. But before that, I wasn't, and I was a grown adult man with a career, but somehow God does that. God grows you up, and now I was talking to someone yesterday. I was out flying my drone at a real estate event, and this guy came up, and he said, oh, that's pretty cool. And, oh, yeah, it's cool. I'm a pastor of the church. He goes, yeah, really? And I said, yeah. He says, you know, I had a chance to look at every option of why life, Christianity makes the most sense. Because why is life so hard? Why is it such a struggle? When everyone around says people are really good, I don't think people are sinful. I had a chance to talk with them. That pain, that ability to do that came from what? Years ago. So I just appreciate laboring together, even in struggle. So when I first came here, we were all young. A lot of us weren't married. And I think Jim said a lot of us met our wives here. And we were single. And now, boy, I look at, we're a little older now. We're moving into a different phase of life. We may not have as much stamina or strength, but we have more conviction. Different phase of life. We're trying to train young people to do all those things, take those chances, but want to use where we are about conviction, trust God. That's a new phase of life. It's really unique in what we have. You know? So, sorry, I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but I'm just excited. I look at the things that God has done. One last thought. You know, when we first started all this, I really thought, because I was used to this, if you work hard on stuff, I like to apply myself diligently. It grows, right? Sometimes I go, you know, God, that has not been big numbers. I really thought there was big numbers. Big. We thought we were starting this, we would do a lot of stuff, be industrious, and God bless us in these ways. When I pray about it, I go, you know, God told us this. God, there wasn't, well, I care about that person. Every person. I care about that person. Every individual, every person is important. That God reaches and works with people. It's been a pleasure and still is to work together with you. Anyway, I'm going to turn this over to Mark, I believe.
Yeah, I get to follow two pastors. I'm Mark. Most of you know me. I'm part of the other music team, not the one that played today, of course. It's the old purple bass there, that's mine. My daughter was talking about God's timing this morning. And this church came into my life exactly when I needed it. I was a pretty broken guy. I had hit rock bottom. I was full of self-loathing. A friend who used to go to this church, a guy named Bruno Fatima, invited me to the church. And I just remember Dean was probably the first person who came up and said hi to me. Talked for a few minutes. Me with my long hair and beard, which was a lot darker than it is now. Wound up sitting pretty close to the front, and you know, the music just kind of washed over me. But then Chris came up. I couldn't tell you what Chris was talking about, but I felt like he was talking to me. I just knew that I had to be a part of this. And over the years, I've seen a lot of friends come and go in this church, and a few of them have tried to tell me, you know, I should leave too. I just felt this is where God wanted me. You know, this, I felt God saying this is where I need to be. I got saved in this church thanks to Tim Sexton, if you remember Tim. Tim shared the gospel with me, baptized me in his hot tub. Like I said, many friends have come and gone over the years, but I always felt I needed to be here. God wanted me. I met my wife here. Had my children in this church. One of them's on the music, one of the music teams now. This is where I need to be. This is where God wanted me.
Well, I also am an engineer, but I only have one point. So I was thinking about how in Timothy, Paul writes in Timothy that the church is the pillar and support of the truth. And I was thinking about how we have been a pillar and a support of the truth here in West Chicago and before that in Lombard, in this area. And we fight a spiritual battle. Sometimes the spiritual battle is hard, and we experience difficulties and tribulations. We have to struggle with our joy. I was thinking about that, and phone move. But I was thinking about a verse in Romans, if I can find it again. That it's right after Paul has talked about how we're to be transformed because we're new creatures. He's kind of winding up Romans. He's talking about being transformed and letting God use us. And he gets down into verse 12, and he says there, rejoicing in hope. Yep, there it is. Rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer. Now, there may be many ways that we have joy, but one of the main ways, I think, is that we have hope, that we look forward to. We rejoice when we have hope. And we're not talking about the common usage that we have in our language where we hope something is going to happen. We're talking about it in the sense that it's something that's sure. It's just not happened yet. As it says in Hebrews 11, verse 6, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. So it's an assurance. It's sure, but it hasn't happened yet. So we have something that we look forward to that gives us joy. And we're supposed to be persevering. And we're supposed to have our joy, and we're supposed to be persevering in our tribulations. Well, I was thinking about finding the spiritual battle. It made me remember something Derek Sporn once said. Some of you probably know him. He's a pastor down in Omaha. And he and I were together a lot back in the past. We were in Ames. We moved together to New Jersey. We moved together to Florida. And then we parted ways back to New Jersey for a time, and he went on to Omaha. Well, one of his interests is studying war. He's one of these guys who likes to read about the generals and how they made decisions and won their battles. And he said once, he was quoting somebody, and I don't remember who said this, but I'm sure you could find out. But he said, the object of war is not to destroy the enemy. The object of war is to destroy the enemy's will to resist. You see the difference? The object is to destroy the enemy's will to resist. And that's what Satan tries to do here and everywhere that Christ is being proclaimed. He wants to stop us. Another verse says, joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. And I've thought about that verse too, and I'm thinking about bones being dry. Well, aren't bones kind of dry and hard anyway? And I got to thinking that maybe what the writer there was thinking about was how the joints between the bones can start to feel dry and stiff if we get arthritic and we don't want to move. And that's what can happen to us in the spiritual battle if we lose our joy. A joyful heart is good medicine. It keeps us from stopping. It keeps us from getting stuck. We need to keep moving forward. We need to keep persevering in tribulation, rejoicing in hope, and devoted to prayer. Those three, I just want to encourage us to keep doing. Don't get dry bone. Keep going. Rejoicing in our hope. Next.
Hello. I was just asked to speak yesterday, so I don't like to speak in front of people. I pray one-on-one, but I'm like, okay. But when I was back in 97, I was just newly divorced from my first husband, and I was looking for a church to go to, and Mark Keneally and Johnny Morrell came up to me at COD and sharing the surveys and asking me to come to church. I kept telling them, no, there's no good reason to, you know. I was a little nervous because I had gotten involved with another church through COD, which had been a cult, and so I was like, no, I don't want to do this. Well, then they sent me a thing saying that they were going to be showing a Josh McDowell movie, and I'm like, well, I know he's a good, solid Christian man. I'll go. And so I went to the movie night, and I was so surprised to see Johnny there and a whole bunch of other people. that I had known from high school, and I was really surprised that Johnny was a Christian just past things from high school, but I was excited, and in the long run, she ended up baptizing me like a year later, and I ended up coming to Glen Arbor, and this place has become like family to me. Everybody's been here for the good times, the bad times. You know, we rejoiced when I got married. We rejoiced when I got divorced again. Or helped me get when I got divorced again. Helped me to learn to be a God pleaser instead of a people pleaser. And if I would have thought when I first came to Glen Arbor 21 years ago that I'd be going on a missions trip, I would have laughed in your face. But I'm real excited to be going in, you know, 3 days. I'm a little nervous, but I know God will give me the strength. And, you know, it's because of people here that I actually, in the field I'm in now, working with the elderly. Jean Baltimore is the one who encouraged me to get my CNA, and she said, you know, you should do it. In fact, one of the guys last night before I left took my hand and he goes, I got to pray for you and the 14 people that are going with you on this mission trip. You're not leaving me until I pray for you. So he's praying for us too. And I'm just thankful. You know, I feel like in some ways, kind of like the movie The Breakfast Club. We all have different abilities, different talents, different weaknesses, but we still work together as a team and love each other in a good way. And we're all here for each other for the good times, bad times, and everything in between. And I feel if you want to know what love is, come to Glen Arbor, because we really know how to show Christ's love here, and I'm very thankful for that. And at times I feel like you guys are more like family to me than my own biological family. And I'm very thankful for all of you, and I love you all.
I am not an engineer, so I have no points. So, 30 years. We've been in church for 30 years. That's pretty cool. I was still a fetus when this church opened its doors. That's pretty wild to think about. And it's actually, this time period is about significant. About 6 years ago, around this time, I was in Kokomo, Indiana, staying with a friend. I just sent a Facebook message to a pastor in Chicago named Dean Claypatch because no one was answering the church phone, and that other guy, Greg, didn't have a Facebook. So I was like, well, I'll try this Dean fellow. And he called me back within like an hour of me sending this message. He's like, hi, I'm Dean. I noticed your message. It was very good. And I expressed an interest to come and serve here at this church. I'm like, I'm looking to come move to Chicago. And I saw the church. I know it's part of the movement, which I was already part. And he graciously welcomed me and informed me of the church and the work that needed to be done. He graciously volunteered someone else's home for me to stay in, who found out about it several months later. But it was great. It was a great arrangement. I was happy to meet everyone, and everyone that came when I came to visit was very gracious to me and said, hi, let me show you around town. And he showed me all what was incorporated and unincorporated. We drove around for a bit, like, this is incorporated. This is unincorporated. Look at this neighborhood. Here's a lamppost. So it was very good to give me the grand tour. But I enjoy really being part of this body of believers. Not much more I can add to what's already been said, the qualities of this time, even though my window is very short. And I know that my age group has fluctuated in terms of people within it. Some are still here, some have left. But at the time, the age group was very welcoming. Everyone who was here said, come on in. We have this meal on Monday night. You can come hang out. I didn't know anyone, but they were very gracious to come let me be part of that, and we all kind of grew in fellowship together as the Lord led us together, and as the Lord led us to different places as well when we separated ways from a time. And those of you who have been here longer know how much the church has changed over time, which is a good thing. You know, if you look at kind of the model that's been set forth by America, or even America Christiana, it views church more as corporations. If you view church that way, then we're not doing good. But church isn't a corporation. Church is these people. The bricks fell down today, we'd still all be a church. When we meet for breaking of bread in different people's homes, we're a church in that moment. and we're succeeding. It's the people. And Jim, I like what you said with your points about the different roles the church plays. They're all organic. They're all based on people, not corporations. And so we're succeeding, thriving. Thousands of people have come in and out of these doors and been reached with the gospel over 30 years. And that's affected this core group of people here. And I've been praying for opportunities to, I want to share this quick story. I know we're short on time. For opportunities to share the gospel. Because I'm actually pretty bad at my relationships. And before I moved, I lived with the McLeans, which, if you know, is a wonderful household, but we're not in a neighborhood of any kind. So reaching your neighbors is very difficult. So being in an apartment complex is really great, because all of your neighbors are on top of you. So like, you can't move 5 feet without whacking into a neighbor. So I've been diligent to try and learn everyone's name in my apartment complex and create the doors for us to reach them over time. And the other couple, several months ago, I was praying for opportunities to reach people with the gospel. I'm like, I would like to keep that part of my DNA thriving. I was coming home on a commute from my commute to, from work, and I saw a car just kind of off the side of the road. Like, it wasn't right. Like, it wasn't sort of stopped. And I saw a guy pushing it. Like, oh, he's helping his buddy push his car. Okay, that's, I got that. I made a mental note. As I turned, I could see the driver's side. No one was in the car. It was just this bloke trying to push his own car out of the road. And I was almost, I'm like 60 seconds away from home. It's date night. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to help this guy out. So I parked my car. I'm like, what do you need? Let's push the car. Do you need gas? He's like, yeah, I need gas. So I'm like, well, I so happen to have a container for gasoline that sits in my car. I'm like, let's go get gas. So he hops in my, I let this guy in my car that I've known for 5 seconds, and we drive to the nearest gas station. And I realize I need to, how do I share the gospel? Like, I don't know what to do. So I just start praying about, how do I make small talk? Let's talk for a bit. Where are you from? What do you do? Let's call him Caleb. And I said, Caleb, what do you do? And he told me what he did, and we chatted for a bit, small talk, had a pleasant conversation. And I said, you said you lived in Chicago, yeah? And he's like, no, I live just 15 minutes away. I'm in West Chicago. And I was like, oh, interesting. Do you know the high school and the church? And he's like, yeah, I live right on Blair. I was like, that's fantastic. So we started talking about that for a minute. We exchanged numbers and set up a time, maybe sometime in the future, to get lunch, because he lives really nearby. So I was really pleased with that opportunity. It was really awesome. So I just wanted to encourage you guys with that. I encourage you guys with the church over, I've only been here for 6 years compared to some of the people who've grown up in here. And it's been really good growth. There have been times that, I think Mark was saying, you relate to, I've been asked by peers, hey, when you come be part of our group, our church? I've had people say, hey, we could pay you to come do ministry at our church. Well, that's nice. They're like, no, I want to stay here. I want to plant my feet here, because if you watch a lot of movies, when the chips are down and when stakes are looking really bad, a lot of times what happens to push things forward is that everyone unites around the idea. So even if the idea is we don't know what we're doing, or in the film, sometimes it's a really bad idea, but everyone says, well, this is it, so let's just, we got to go forward. Now, not that we have really bad ideas, but we've made everything work together because we've worked together and we've stayed together. Since we're not a corporation, the numbers go necessarily affect our ability to do our job organically. So I'll just share two verses from Ephesians, one from Galatians, to make this point. I had my notes in the verse that I wanted to read, and I didn't know. I don't know why I did that. Let's see. Speaking the truth, this is one of my favorite verses about the church. Speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow, that it's building itself up in love. And in Galatians 6, let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. I made a church leader in our movement say the leaders in your church are the people who stick around until there's a breakthrough. So this is experiences we've experienced are common to every body of believers that's ever walked the face of the earth. Is there a thing of what you just said? This is new. Behold, it has been before. Every church has gone through things that we have gone through. They have matured. So if you're sitting thinking about the days of yore, 30 years ago, this church looks a lot different than it did when you all started 30 years ago. That is exactly as it should be. It is not to be stagnant. We have matured as a body of believers. And we have 30 years of growth and maturity to show for it. So let's all celebrate in that together as the body of believers. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, and now the music team is going to lead us in a song, and then we will break bread together. Let me set this up here.